Welcome back, everybody, to Arts About.
The show about art that's a work of art in itself. I say that every week, and it's just surprises me that I do say that every week.
You say it so well.
Yet I do. It's brought to you by the generosity of the McClellan Gallery and Sculpture Park and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio, and I can see the sign from here.
You can indeed, and facilitated is one of those words, isn't it, John? Of course, John Baird, our regular artist and storyteller, so I've got to say good morning to you as well.
Yeah, thanks, Will.
Look, Sabra is still away this week. I think she's still in the desert, and I know she's looking after her mum, so we'll make a special mention of that. But today, we are going to be welcoming Sally back into the studio.
Where is she at the moment? She's on the way here?
No, she's just flown in from Turkey this morning. And I'm sure she's got lots to tell us about what's happening over there. So I think between us, we will have a kind of an Ottoman Empire debrief before I hand the keys over or hand the keys back to the Arts About studio. She'll be here in a few minutes, so I'm looking forward to that.
Mm. Now I'm going to talk about Louise Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun.
Sounds like a type of fancy car in France in the 1920s.
Yeah, more interesting than that, actually. She was Marie Antoinette's spin doctor.
Oh, great. Okay. When I think of Marie Antoinette and spinning, I think of spinning wheels. I guess that's more political spin you're referring to there. Yeah, okay.
She was fantastically unsuccessful.
Well, that'll be great. We're looking forward to that. Look, in the meantime, the Melbourne Festival is up and running. And today we're going to have one of the stars of one of the Spiegel Tent shows, Limbo, who will be coming with us, coming to join us on the show. I think we're going to phone in. It's a show-stopping mix of cabaret, circus and acrobatics, as we often get in the Spiegel Tent. Mm. And it opened there last week and it's on until the 1st of November. Also later in the show, of course, we hope to see and hear the lofty view from Cliff Ellen.
Yeah.
His view from the cliff. And
oop, here's Sally. She's just walked in.
Now we have the slow, nice slam of the door, that one. It looks like Sally's just arrived. Cliff's back from his end-of-season trip, but right now, why don't we speak with the regular host and founder of Arts About, who also happens to be my wonderful and adventurous wife, about what she's been up to for the last 3 weeks. Welcome back, Sally.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hi, Sally.
It's great to be back. Yes, it has been quite a long time. You know, I've been hearing some...
Just leave the suitcase over in the corner there, that'll be all right.
Yeah. I will do. I've been hearing some rather extraordinary things about how you guys have been keeping the show running.
Well, it is still running, I think.
Do you have anything to say now before I dig it up later?
No, we're out of here shortly.
We didn't break anything.
We tried not to break stuff. Mm. There has been letters of complaint.
Yes.
And there has been pornography, smut... politically incorrect discussion. Mm.
Cosmonauts too, I hear.
Well, yes, we have a special relationship with the International Space Station. As
particularly
you know.
Frustrated at your absence, as it turns out.
Do you think so? Yeah. Well, I think even my ideas of the broad spectrum of art have expanded since I've been away, I've got to say, you know.
Well, I haven't had a chance to see you because I left home this morning. You were coming back from the airport. So
yes.
What the hell happened in Turkey?
Well, it's been 30 years since I've been in Turkey, which is quite a long time. I know you probably...
Only seems like a month.
You were there as a child.
Yeah. Yes, I was there as a child originally. And it's just so extraordinary to visit the same place after such a length of time. You know, it's like the same body, but a very different personality that greeted me when I got there, you know. It's just, I would say that the population must have doubled in that time. The amount of people that are in that city is just phenomenal. It is so dense that it is... it's a bit frightening almost at the same time. You know, it used to be fishing boats all around the coastline there, right in the centre of the city, and now it's just mega cruise liners and the traffic's at a standstill and so on. But everything in silhouette looks the same, you know, the beautiful hills and the extraordinary mosques and the minarets and the sounds, and, you know, it's like it's mind-boggling. It's not surprising that there are so many tourists there as well, because you're essentially in the carcass of a city that has changed so many times over the millennium, and all the evidence of all the other civilizations is still there.
Were you there for the Biennale that was on?
I was, yeah. But I took my dad and my daughter with me, and I realized...
That's our daughter, is that the
that's
one?
That's your or daughter, your okay. only daughter, yeah. Pearl. Yeah. And just discovered that there was no way that I could drag them around, because the Biennale is all over the city, and moving around the city is so incredibly time-consuming, because the traffic is just at a standstill everywhere. So, you know, you can pick a thing and go and see that, really.
Mm. Do they have Uber?
I doubt it, actually. They have lots of cabs, but the traffic seriously is at a standstill. You really can only get from one side of the city to the other using a cab or the metro.
And when you say that the silhouette of the city hasn't changed, does that mean that they haven't built high-rise buildings? Or
not in the old town, they haven't. Right. You know, there are in places, but really, no. The old town silhouette seems pretty well preserved. Right. It is interesting, actually. Everywhere you go in Turkey and you drive through the countryside, and it's farmland everywhere. There's food wherever you look. But then you get to the outskirts of a city, and that's all high rise. All the apartments, there are no houses. Everything is multi-story. So the population is kind of controlled in these really small footprints, which is fabulous. We don't do that here.
They have a sensitivity to the antique and to the ancient.
They definitely do. It's all around them, you know. As I said, it's like the carcass of millions of civilizations that you're just walking past every day. I think Rome does that too.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just incredible. But on my way in from the airport, we were picked up by a young man who, you know, wanted to know all about us and who we were and what we were doing, what do we do back home. And I told him about Arts About. I said, I do a radio show. It's called Arts About. And he said, oh, Turks aren't interested in art.
Yeah.
I said, what? He said, terrific. Oh, no, probably about 70% of Turks they don't care about art at all. And I was just sort of, I didn't know what to say. I thought, how can somebody actually say that when here they are living in a society that is just founded upon it, but the art of so many different civilizations that have come before, you know. So that was a real sort of a kernel that I took with me wherever I went. And, you know, I just couldn't see how, you know, culture that was so rich and surrounded by the evidence of architecture and ceramics and painting and music and philosophy and writing and all of those things, how he could sort of not include that in what he called.
Wonder what they are interested in.
Well, interestingly, at the end, look, I went on a trip around and I saw them at through the countryside. I went to Çanakkale, the Gallipoli Peninsula, and I went to Ephesus and Troy and saw all the ruins and all of that history, and kind of in the midst of all that came back to Istanbul and thought exactly the same thing. What, you know, it's all around them, but what do modern Turks think, and what's going on in their heads? And so I went to the Istanbul Modern.
Right.
And they had the most amazing and serendipitously the most perfect exhibition on there at the time. And it was called Artists in Their Time. And the exhibition was a collection of works that had been curated from not only Turkish artists, but artists that were viewing their culture and the time that they lived in it through the paradigms of their culture.
Right.
So, you know, Anselm Kiefer was one of them. I'm being wound up already. I've only just got back.
It's just swatting the fly.
Oh. Anselm Kiefer was one of the artists. So was a woman called Farinissa Zaid, who is an Iranian princess who has been painting really extraordinary abstract art since the 30s. And William Kentridge was in there.
Oh, William Kentridge. I love William Kentridge.
And all of them were looking at They were somehow or another illustrating where they came from and describing the sort of the zeitgeist that they saw and witnessed. And it was, some of it was sculpture, some of it was video and whatever. But my favourite piece in all of it was I actually walked past it in the first place because I didn't realise it was a piece of art before I'd gone past it. But I was drawn back by a soundscape of seagulls. And anybody that's been to Istanbul would know that there are seagulls everywhere, and there have probably been seagulls since the dawn of time there because it's all coastline and it's fish. Yeah. And
they look like our seagulls?
They look like our seagulls. They're maybe a bit bigger, but they sound like the ones that you hear on television. Okay. You know, so they've got a different voice to our seagulls. Yeah. And so there was the soundtrack of the seagulls, and the piece was at one of those boxes that you see in airports that have the letters that keep clicking over.
Yep.
And the letters were clicking over and all these words were appearing and I didn't recognise any of the words at all. And I was trying to make sense of it. So, of course, I read the little blurb on the side of it and discovered that it was a piece called Istanbul and it was made by Hüseyin Çalayan. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard from about who he is, but he's a fashion designer.
Right.
And he's been a really big name in fashion design in Europe probably for 20 years, a long time. And when I lived in London and I used to produce the catwalk shows, he was beginning to show then, and that's 25 years ago or something. So I never knew that he was a conceptual artist. But this piece was called Istanbul, and I discovered that all the names that were clicking up were 150 different names that Istanbul has been called since it was first settled by, since people started to have a civilization there. Like, we knew it was called Constantinople.
So it's not just the two names.
It's not just the two names. There's 150 of them. Mm. And it was a really powerful piece when given that context of, my God, the history goes back that far. We see the buildings, we see the ruins and all of that, but it actually goes back way further than that. Anyway, that was my favourite piece. I just thought that was really fabulous.
I wonder what the first name was. Did you? Was it sort of...
No, there didn't seem to be any names like that. They were all completely Crikey. Different. They didn't, and none of them seemed to be derivative. They probably were. I probably didn't see 150 of them. Hmm. Anyway, I just thought that exhibition perfectly described what's going on in Istanbul now. It's, you know, it's a modern city that has come from such a complex mix of so many other things, and they're all subjects of it. You know, there was a result of all of those incredible mixtures.
So you joined the 30% of Turks who embrace art.
Yeah, I did. No, see, I dispute. I think that young man actually didn't realise that he was sitting in it. You know, I think when
his credibility is just immediately disappears when he says 70% of Turks.
Yeah, I know.
Where does he get that from?
I know, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
Chemists and doctors have done the tests. I guess if you asked our own son the same question, he'd say, no one in Australia is interested in art.
Yeah.
Mm. That's from his point
no
of view.
No one that he knows.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But at the same time, I think he doesn't realise the complex mix of culture that he is either. Yeah. And this young man would be the same thing. And perhaps he doesn't call that art. Perhaps he doesn't call, you know, beautiful buildings or music or any of those things art. Perhaps he only thinks it's just something that's drawn on a piece
of paper.
It's
taken for granted, yeah. And it's also a symptom of a new generation where they identify as Turks or Australians, but primarily they just identify as people of the world, and the boundaries, the globalisation, it's happening very subtly with young people that they now, you know, they take a lot of stuff travelling to other countries for granted. They're often surprised when they run into trouble. But look, right now, this is the official part of the show today.
Oh, really?
I'm going
to
hand over the keys to the studio.
Oh, do I get the keys back?
You get the keys back.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness
so
me.
I'm going to give you the
and
keys.
So far you haven't wrecked anything. That's very good. Are they all here? All right.
Yeah,
awesome. Thank you for that. Well, I hope it doesn't mean we're going to lose you, Will.
No, I'll hang about. And I think we're going to go over to some station announcements, and then I'm going to get you to pick it up. John's going to be coming
on. John's going
to
come on.
Well,
sure.
Just before we do that, Sally, I'm glad you mentioned William Kentridge.
Yes.
I got drunk with William Kentridge in Little Lonsdale Street.
No way!
So that's maybe a story.
We'd like to hear
day.
A little bit about this after the
Paul
station
Brody
announcements.
Paul Brody is freaking out at my at the red needle.
Yeah. And now it's time for John On.
Thank you, Swanee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Louise Elizabeth Vigy Le Brun. Now she's a French portraitist from the turn of the 17th and 18th centuries. Is that right? No, the 18th and 19th centuries. Mm-hmm. So around the 1700s. She was born 1755. Her father sent her off to a convent. That happened to a lot of girls. Then he died while she was there. Her mother remarried to a man who recognised her skills as an artist, put her to work, and she got a bit of a career going at like 13, 14 years old. She was very good at what she did. But he pocketed all the dough, and she was unhappy with that arrangement. So she went off and married an artist, an art dealer, and he did much the same thing, put her to work and pocketed all the money, and she was unhappy with that, but she pressed ahead anyway. But she became very good at because she was a young woman, people were comfortable with having her painting their wives or their daughters, because they weren't leaving their wives and daughters alone in the room with a man. They were leaving them with this young woman who was a very good portraitist. And she got particularly good at the hat and the scarf and the ribbon and the gown and the bodice and all that sort of stuff. She was very good at that. And pretty much the same sort of pose in most of her portraiture. But as I said, she was very good at it, and she made her way up through the aristocrats in Paris, and was popular there until she made a portrait of a young woman who was smiling and had her mouth open.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that one young woman might paint another young woman in a private room where the young woman being painted had her mouth open with her teeth showing was a little steamy for the aristocrats, you know.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
And they all started complaining, to the point where they were saying that, look, the only reason she's there in the court is because of her sexual charms, and she doesn't even make the paintings herself, you know. Someone else makes the pictures, and this rumour was getting about. And she was ultimately saved by Marie Antoinette, who liked her and had her making portraits of her. And the spin doctor bit is essentially that Le Brun was employed by Marie Antoinette to make a more sort of pleasant image of her for the French people. The French people didn't like Marie Antoinette much. Her big mistake, of course, was that she wasn't French,
yeah.
You know, which is a crime in France, apparently. It was at the time. So she made these paintings of her being very motherly with her children. And the French still disliked Marie Antoinette. That didn't work. So it was a bit of bad spin doctoring. In fact, people were remarking that the paintings were simply of a woman who was a bad mother. So the rumour machine was against poor Le Brun for a long time. And they really started to attack her. They didn't like her. They thought she was far too friendly with Marie Antoinette, and that she was a fake and somewhat of a temptress for the men in the court. And she was essentially saved by the French Revolution, because that happened, and they just started cutting the heads off all of the aristos, and she had to flee.
Oh, so she didn't get included in them.
No, but they were looking for her. But she went to Rome, and she became very popular amongst the noble in the nobility in Rome. And then made her way up into Vienna, where she met, through a connection with Marie Antoinette, she met Catherine. And Catherine then had her employed to paint her children, which she did. And she painted these two young girls, who are kind of tweenies, in these bodices with bare arms. And again, everyone freaked
outrage.
Out.
Outrage.
Yeah, there's too much flesh. There was just too much flesh. So she took the painting down and painted sleeves onto the arms. So these girls are wearing bodices with a kind of a T-shirt shoulder on them, with a sleeve coming out of the T-shirt shoulder, which became the fashion all over Europe, you know, as a result of the painting, and which is a kind of a stunning bit of work, I reckon.
It's fantastic. Who was the one who painted the Maya, which was the reclining
Goya.
Nude? It was Goya, wasn't it? Yes. Mm. And he had to paint another one with clothes on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two versions.
Like, yeah, they didn't like flesh in those days, did they?
Well, they did. They just didn't like it thrust in front of them, perhaps. Yeah. But her, I think, most notorious act was she lived till in her 80s, but at the age of 45, when she was accepted back into Napoleonic Paris, she nicked off over to London, painted Lord Byron, and is rumoured to have seduced him.
Oh!
And left him somewhat hurt and confused.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That is a great story, John. Thank you. Another great John on. It's nice to be back. Hey, I think given the exhibition that I was talking about, Artists in our Time, it made me realise that, you know, moments... Well, this next song is about moments in time. It's Fatboy Slim here, right now. Our next guest once held the very extraordinary title of youngest female sword swallower in the world. She is Heather Holliday, and she's performing in the award-winning show called Limbo that is a combination of circus, cabaret and acrobatics, and it's debuting here in Melbourne at the Spiegel Tent as part of the Melbourne Festival. It's been previously sold out in London, Edinburgh, Sydney, Bogota, Auckland, Adelaide and Munich, and the show has opened already as part of the Melbourne Festival's offering this year and is one of the star attractions in the Spiegel Tent. I've got Heather on the line now, and I'm pretty excited because I've never met a sword swallower before, and I'm hoping to pick up a few tips. Good morning, Heather Holliday.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming on Arts About. Mm-hmm. Tell me, Heather, sword swallowing, it's an incredible thing. How on earth do you discover that you want to be a sword swallower?
Oh, my goodness. It was just actually a love of the carnival, and in Coney Island, there was so much to see down there, and the freak show was just one of the main attractions.
Incredible. And you just thought it was just something that you wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, and I didn't really know that I wanted to swallow swords as much as I just wanted to be on stage with those amazing people.
So what do you do when you want to be a part of it? And I can imagine how incredibly enticing being part of a carnival and a circus is, that sort of all that unity. So what do? You just start trying out different things that they...
Well, for me, I went into it not having any skills, okay? I was in high school, and I was just applying to be an intern and work in the museum, maybe, rip tickets and, you know, I don't know. I didn't know what I was expecting to do. Yeah. I didn't really want to be there, and I wanted to be surrounded by that environment. And I didn't know that I was going to be on stage. I knew I wanted to be on stage, but I didn't think that was going to happen to me, like a dumb kid. So I didn't really have any expectations for that. So I went in on my first day of my internship, and there was a cast shortage, and the snake charmer had just left, and they needed another girl on stage. So they just put me on my first day. I didn't have a dress. I didn't even look nice. I didn't... And I was wearing jeans and stuff, and they needed me to just do some magician assistant stuff. It's really random.
Brilliant. I love it. I love that there's an internship for that kind of thing now.
But I was supposed to be just in the museum, so it's just so random.
Yeah, that's wonderful. How exciting. What a brilliant first day, and I'm not surprised you never looked back. Now, tell us about the show that's on in Melbourne now called Limbo.
Well... it's so amazing because it's a live music show. And so it just seems a little surreal because the music is so strange. And it is just like this, everybody's playing weird instruments and making weird noises with special effects accompanying all the circus acts that are in the show. So it's really just a strange world that you walk into.
I've heard the music has. I've heard that there's actually an instrument that's been invented for the show. Is that right?
Oh my goodness! Yeah. So one of our drummer Mick Stewart, he invented an instrument called the kalimba.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It sounds so beautiful. But the thing about inventing this instrument is that it has no rhyme or reason. You can't actually learn like going up a scale. It's all memorization.
Right.
It's really interesting. No one else can play it but him.
Amazing. I know that music plays a huge part. And the musical director, is his name Ship Shiri?
Oh, of course it sounds like that. No, it's Skip. Sorry.
It's Skip, is it? Skip
yeah.
Shiri. He's described
an X in there.
It does have an X in it?
Yeah, he just had to put that in there and confuse people, hey?
I know, I just didn't know how to pronounce it. He's described the music as jank. And he said it's like a New York brass band marching through New Orleans on its way to an all-night party in Berlin.
The fact that he can even describe it like that, it sounds so right. You don't know what it is because you can't compare it to anything. You know, he's, you know, doing a harmonica through a megaphone and dropping a marble into a Pyrex bowl and just the sound of the marble in the bowl through a pickup, a special effect. I mean, it's just, what is that? You can't call that anything. You can't compare it to anything. It's just strange and surreal, and you're constantly trying to watch the band to figure out how they're making these noises, but also trying to watch the aerialist and the hand balancer. So there's so much going on, and the music is so punchy and so it's like a party on stage every night.
How wonderful. Now, tell us what we're likely to see when we're there. Who are the performers and what's happening?
Oh, my goodness. It's a lot of fun. I'm so happy to work with these people. We've got Mikhail Braves. He does a Chinese pole act. And a Chinese pole is sort of an acrobat on, it's the pole. And the pole is a grippy pole. It's not like what you see in a strip joint or anything. It's a grippy pole so you can climb it with your feet. And then you do acrobatics off of it. And he is just so graceful. And it's really beautiful. It's one of the parts of the show that has everybody on the edge of their seat because you never know if he's going to fall. He's doing flips up there. It's really, really amazing. And we've got a hand balancer, Danique Abishev.
What did you call that one, a hand balancer?
Yeah, he basically does handstands, and he's more comfortable on his hands than most people are on their feet. He's jumping on these posts that are about maybe they're like 5 feet high, and he jumps on one hand across them all. And, I mean, I couldn't do that on my feet. So, I mean, that's how I know it's so amazing. He just is really amazing, incredible, and really aggressive handstand style. Like, it's really amazing. That, I think, is one of the standout acts in the show. We also have Evelyn Allard. She's doing an aerial hoop number at the end of the show. It's beautiful. And we have such amazing lights. Again, for a Spiegel tent show, it's very rare for us to have such intricate lights. So we have lights coming out of the stage. We have amazing, like the show really needs it. I don't really think it needs it, but it's just an amazing added thing. It's just, I can't go on enough. And we have a German contortionist named
I always love a contortionist. A
but
girl
the great
or
thing
a boy?
Him,
or him?
Oh, it's, yeah. The great thing about him is that he's not like a skinny blonde Russian girl, you know, who is like, oh yeah, she's really skinny and, you know, Russian trained, whatever. This guy is muscular and built, and
wow.
He's just not someone you'd expect when he comes on stage and he takes his shirt off. He's like really fit. You just don't expect this man to be able to twist and turn the way he does. He's really amazing.
Well,
it's a really good show.
It sounds fantastic. Have you performed this in a Spiegel tent before?
Yeah, we normally tour in a Spiegel tent. We've done a couple of venues where we weren't in one, but the show was designed to be in one.
Yeah. Now, I've heard that the show was originally, like very, very early on, conceived and rehearsed first here in Melbourne. Is that right? Before it's gone off on its world tour. Is that really right?
Yeah, that's true. Our company, Stratton Fret, is Melbourne-based. So we all flew here, met each other for the first time and created the show in 3 weeks, which is just insane, not knowing each other, even the musicians not knowing each other. And then we did our first season in the 2013 Adelaide Fringe.
And then it's gone on to just about everywhere to sell out.
Oh, my goodness.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah, straight away, we had a five-month run in London, like straight away. And that was when we really got to know each other and really evolved the show into something special, because then we started to have connections with each other and, you know, work on building chemistry with each other, you know.
Yeah. And it's been all over since. Now, there's a rumor that Madonna actually came to see the show twice. Is that true?
Absolutely. She was front row, tried not to look at her. Very hard to do. She's, she's a big presence. We had to walk her in through the backstage after the show, after the doors had opened and everyone was seated, so not to make a fuss. But yeah, the first time she came with her boyfriend. And then she loved the show so much that she decided to bring her whole family the next time.
Wow. Did she come backstage and meet you?
Yes, she absolutely did. In fact, everybody was all around her, and it was really just too much. So I had to go into the dressing room. I couldn't, I felt funny about, I didn't want to swarm her. I'm from New York City, and I've been around celebrities before, so I'm not really I don't really love to crowd them. But then she specifically asked for me by name to come out and talk to her. I was so, oh my goodness. You know, you think you can be calm and collected, but no.
But not in the face of Madonna, for goodness sake.
Yeah. She called me by name. She said, Heather. And I was like, said my name. Yeah.
Sensational. Well, it sounds like a really fabulous show. I can't wait to see it.
It's
Heather
so
Holliday.
Much fun. Please thank you. Come and say hello.
Thank you so much for coming on Arts About to tell us about it today.
Of course.
Limbo is on in the Spiegel tent. It's part of the Melbourne Festival. You can get tickets by going to the Melbourne Festival website or at Ticketmaster. It's on until Sunday, the 1st of November. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you, Heather Holliday.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And now it's time for the part of the show that is my absolute favourite. It's the view from the cliff, and our mentor, elder, great friend, provocateur, writer, actor, columnist Cliff Ellen is here beside me. Good morning, Cliff.
Good morning, Sally. It's good to see you back again.
Yes.
Because Will was a bit of a disappointment.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh,
no offence.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And what about Swanee?
No, I refuse to talk to him. He's a bit of a nutcase. Swanee's problem is that Swanee only likes people that are important. You know how that psychological thing, people attract important people? Well, that's Swanee. If they're important, he'll be friendly. If they're not, he'll ignore them.
Oh, really?
I picked that early on, to be quite honest. Now, listen, good news.
Yes?
I went down for a coffee at Main Street, and that Russian woman came along for another cigarette.
The one that asked that.
It's working.
Yeah.
Well, she's 40. She's at that critical age, you know.
Yeah.
Plumpish, unmarried. No. Halfway through the conversation, I thought, well, I think I'll flirt. I tried a bit of flirting.
Mm.
I don't think it worked. But two or three attempts sort of thing. At the finish, she did say, look, we must have a drink sometime. I said, have you got my details? She said, yes, I've got your email. I don't think she has. But anyway.
She probably got it out of the newspaper.
I don't know. But it was interesting. Russian. Yeah. And 40 at that critical age, as I said. That's sort of vital. Anyway, that's my excitement. Isn't it the Mornington Festival on today or something?
The Mornington Festival? Is the Mornington Festival?
Well, something. Main Street Festival today.
Oh. Well, there we are.
Have I got my weeks wrong?
I've just got back from Turkey. I've got no idea. That's my excuse.
Yes, you were lucky to get back from Turkey.
Yes, I know.
Morning, Cliff.
Morning, John.
I might just duck down the street and see if that festival's on.
We should go there after the show.
I've got a feeling it's today, but I'll go down and have a look anyway.
Yeah.
Now, sadly, Oddball, the movie.
Yes.
It's about the Miramar Italian sheepdog protecting the penguins at Warrnambool, which sounds quite gripping, doesn't it? But it's getting really good reviews. And everyone tells me Shane Jacobson is fantastic in it.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps I'm wrong about Shane Jacobson. Perhaps I'll give
him
a
check. Do you think you are?
I don't know. You know he's in Open Slather, don't you?
No.
Well, Open Slather's on the Comedy Channel. And they rang me up and asked me if I'd do a sketch there.
Yeah.
And I said yes. And the day before, they emailed me and said, sadly, the producer's decided to go with another actor. So no big deal, because it didn't worry me. I didn't have to go up to Elsternwick. Yep. But then last week, they rang me again for another sketch. So I said yes again, and whatever the details were, I just said, yeah, I agree. Send me up to Elsternwick. I don't care what they're paying anyway. But they emailed me about 4 hours later and said, oh, I'm sorry, we've decided to cut this sketch. So I never got there, and not only is Shane in it, but that other fellow's in it, Stephen Curry's in it.
Oh, two of your favourites.
Two of my favourite actors.
Perhaps they've been listening to the show, Cliff.
Well, I watched two episodes of Opus Ladder because I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, I better have a look at the rhythms and that, you know, not that I can't do it blindfolded, but I didn't particularly like it.
Oh, really? I haven't seen it. See, we don't have that. That's it's Foxtel or something. What is it?
Comedy Channel, Foxtel.
Yeah, we don't have that.
But the sketch I was going to do was quite good. But there you go. That's the way it goes, you know, ups and downs.
Mm.
What have you got here?
Any other good shows on at the moment?
Well, no, movies-wise, Sicario is supposed to be good. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I don't know what that is either.
Yeah, good reviews, you know. Now I've been looking. Oh, Mad Max Fury Road. You know that?
Oh, my God.
They got the best film at the, San Sebastian Film Festival.
Yes.
Why did it get the best?
I have no idea. I watched it on the plane going over. I thought, well, do you remember Clint's recommendation, Carmageddon, the best film he'd ever seen, on and on he went.
Car chase.
What a piece of drivel.
Well,
what an expensive piece of drivel.
Well, it's a mystery, you know, that we'll never solve, unless the San Sebastian people are all Mexicans. It could be. You never know.
I don't know. I mean, for effects and all of that sort of thing, if you want to see a lot of money chewed up on screen, sort of well with effects and you know, cinematography, sure. But for God's sake, if you're going to spend all the money on that sort of stuff, can't you write a comprehensible story?
Well, Sally, 70% of Australians are actually interested in rat rods.
What are they?
Well, they're the kind of cars that they use in that film. You know?
Oh.
I think 72% on the last...
Rat rods.
Yeah.
That, quite like that word.
That car race last Sunday, what was that? That got the highest ratings. So a huge majority of people like to watch cars going around in a big circle.
So is Australia a nation of petrol heads?
Yes.
Really?
No.
And how has that escaped me?
Just a nation of nutcases. That's all.
But emotional nutcases. Yeah, I like
so, I want to just say this Red Stitch annual program supporting script development. The applicants must have a season of their writing previously performed, and they must be a graduate, carry a graduate diploma or a bachelor, or a higher writing course as recommended by a writing professional. Gee, that cuts the field down, doesn't it? I get so. I think, give us a break. Have a, you know, let people apply, but they sort of restrict the applicants so much that they're only dealing with their own types.
Yeah, it's true. So it's really silly.
It annoys me. Red Stitch, you're a pain in the neck.
Open up your books, Red Stitch.
And has anyone come along about this SPAC Centre All Weekend thing, 30th of October, November 1st?
Well, I know that guys mentioned it last week, A Woman's Place from, the pop-up op shops. And yes.
Are they buttons on? Is that Carol Petullo's thing?
That is Carol Petullo, yes.
We're
going to
watch that again.
Huh?
We're going to watch that again.
Well, I'm sure that it is evolved, as do all pieces of theatre.
Anything by Carol will be excellent.
Of course it will be. Of course it will be. So, yeah, we're very interested in that. I'm going to try and get Carol on the show next week to talk about that.
Oh, good. I'll make sure I don't come.
Not sure we did mention that last week. We were going to.
No Sabra today.
Oh, we did, either. Did we? Yeah.
No Sabra?
No Sabra. She's out in the desert at the moment. Were you going to pick on her, were you?
No, I just want to know what she thought of that fantastic book, A Letter to My Children, by, you know, Christopher Pine. Oh, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? How old's Christopher?
I've missed that. What's Christopher Pine done now?
He's written a book.
Has he?
Yes. How old is he? 40?
Oh, he must be a bit older than that.
It's a bit, well, I don't know, but he's a bit young to be, you know, perhaps the children listen to him at this stage.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I had a couple of beers with my children a couple of days ago. I might as well be sitting in a room on my own.
Now, there's been a new arts minister appointed while I've been gone. Does anyone know who that is?
Mitch Fifield.
Yes.
We talk about him every week, but we don't know anything about him still.
Oh, okay. We'll have to do an investigation.
Wait a minute.
What?
Mitch said, I think the approach I'll bring to the arts is someone who has a curious mind, an open heart, a love of people and a sense of humour. What more could you want?
Oh, for God's sake, your attitudes are platitudes. That's all I can say to that.
It's a new slogan.
He enjoys having a piece of cheese on the end of a toothpick.
Yeah.
Come along to a few shows.
Either way, you know, we don't talk politics on this show, but what are they doing? They're running 50-50 at the moment. So, I mean, not popularity-wise with Billy and Big Mal.
Yeah.
But party-wise, they're about 50-50. So when we get down to the last month of the elections, it'll be very interesting. I want to say one thing.
Okay.
Now, anyhow, I've had a few people complaining about my column not being in the newspapers. Now, look, if you really want to read my column, it's still on the blog. So just go to Google and type in by Cliff Allen. That's E-double-L-E-N. And you'll find me, if you're interested. Otherwise, don't bother.
And stop pestering Cliff about his column.
No. It's just that they seem genuinely interested.
Oh, well, they probably all, are. So. You have a very interesting
opinion. I'm not going to carry around a card.
By Cliff Allen, everybody. You'll find him out there. So what are you going to do for the rest of the afternoon, Cliff?
Well, I've just told you. I'm going down.
Of course, you're going to the Mornington Festival.
See if I can find that 40-year-old Russian again.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, I know I'm nearly 80, but, you know, the game's not over yet.
And what about a song to take you out?
Ah, Bobby Darin. Let's have something decent instead of those songs I've never heard of. Beyond the Sea. I think that'll be lovely. John? Good to see you.
Lovely to see you, Cliff.
Yes.
I can just see you down there in the main street flipping a cigarette out of the pack for the Russian bird.
Yes, drinking my long black.
Nice to see you, Cliff.
Goodbye.
This is the part of the show where we usually give some news.
Yes, got a few bits of news in there this week.
We got a bit sidetracked last week, I think, when you were away. We had a letter of objection from a listener.
So I heard.
Yeah. Morning, Miss Dunbar.
Yes, it was an objection to the smut that had been on the program.
I think we've dealt with it correctly, and at the think tank in Port Douglas next month, we'll be bringing that up again.
Oh, do I get to go to the think tank in Port Douglas?
Not sure. I think the tickets have already been issued. You weren't here when it was arranged, so I'm not sure.
And as you pointed out, Will, Swanee has in fact been suspended.
Oh, yes.
One more place at the table for us. All the more for us.
Well, anyway, look, there's lots of things going on, it seems. There is a woman's place coming up at SPAC all weekend from the 30th of September to the 1st of October.
October, I think you'll find, till the 1st of November.
Oh, that's exactly what I meant, yes. Thank you about that. Yeah, sorry
about
that.
Jet lag.
That is something that has been contrived and put together by Carol Pocciullo. Hopefully we'll get to hear directly from her next week to tell us about it. But it's conversations, poetries, stories and singing, and all set in local op shops.
Says here that we're going to be talking to John Cunningham.
Yes, I'm going to arrange to get him on the show next week. What do you think about that?
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I'd love to have him on the show. I'd like to talk to him as well.
Well, let's do both, shall we?
Didn't he used to drive the ferry?
No, Cunningham.
I don't think John Cunningham drove the ferry. Or not this John Cunningham.
Oh, okay.
He's now the new director of the McClelland
Gallery. It's not impossible.
Of course, yeah.
Yes, our sponsor. And
could be the same Mr. Cunningham.
Well, I suppose it could be. Also coming up in the future, we're going to use an interview that you did, Will, I think, with a local photographer, Emma Phillips.
Oh, Emma was great. Yeah, very interesting story. That'll be a good one.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's going to be coming to one of the shows coming up. The Melbourne Festival is on, everybody. Go and see Limbo. And also go and see something else. The Smorgasbord of Events is amazing. So you should just have a look at that website. Don't forget that it's on.
What's this about Australian artists in Bali?
Well, that's the exhibition that's on at the McClelland Galleries at the moment.
We're going to get over there and have a look at the Donald Friends.
It's controversial, all the Donald Friends stuff these days. Mm.
Yeah.
It never used to be. He was just considered one of the finest drawers that we've ever produced. And
which
of course,
he is, wonderful draftsman.
He is a wonderful, wonderful drawer. But, of course, the closing down of our minds in this country a little bit, things have become a bit more controversial because he drew a lot of young boys over there.
So. He did a Henson.
Yeah, he was a Henson of his time. Mm. Well, that exhibition is on in the McClelland Gallery until 29th of November, so there's plenty of time to go and see
Presumably they'll have Ian Fairweather over there as well, would think.
Perhaps they will, yes. Auspicious Arts Incubator is presenting another workshop called Secrets of Success. It's for independent artists and small to medium arts organisations and creative industries. It's going to be on at the Safety Beach Yacht Club. So go to eventbrite.com and search for Auspicious Arts Incubator, and I'll put up a link on our Facebook page.
It's nicely positioned down there, the Safety Beach
Yacht
Club.
It's not a bad joint, the Safety Beach Yacht Club. Mm. It's worth a visit, if something exciting wasn't on. But this one is. This is exciting, and it's on Sunday, 25th of October. So keep your eyes out for
the
that.
The Summer's Art Fair.
Yeah.
Did we used to do live broadcasts from there? Is that that?
Yes, we did too. Hmm. I don't know whether we're doing it anymore.
Right.
We probably haven't been invited. We're probably not that good.
That van is far too comfortable for us these days.
Yeah, but you know, yes. Yes, it was too noisy. I don't think we could.
And with the piano in there that Brendan's installed, there's very little room now for all of the equipment.
Mm.
The piano looks good, though. It's an upright.
Yeah,
he's very good on that. I heard him out there this morning in the car park.
Mm.
Very good.
Yeah, he's just come back from Boort. Did you know that there's a town called Boort in central Victoria?
Yeah. Oh, I grow olives in Boort.
Oh, Brendan's just been there for the weekend.
B-O-O-R-T.
Yeah.
Mm. It's Olive City.
Is it? Okay. Well, everybody, if you've missed the show, you've missed Arts About. Catch up on the show via the podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime tomorrow, just like magic, or hear us repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12 after Health Matters with Angela Jacobson. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website page. Please join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know what we like.
Is that
but
the way
at least we know nothing
what?
About art.
What?
Is that right? Yeah.
I don't know.
It's falling apart, that bit.
I know.
I think
it's rather nice.
I think it's been cocked up again.
Oh, well. Bye, everybody.
Bye.